So it was really an on the brink moment for DeFi, and pretty scary.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the FCAT Crypto Brief. I'm Matt Allen, and today I'm joined by David Shapiro and Max Waddington. Today we're going to be covering some recent exploits and hacks in the crypto ecosystem, how they're connected to social engineering, maybe the role that AI could or could not have played here, but some big headlines. But first, gentlemen, welcome to the show. We've got a lot to talk about today. But before we get into that, we've got some news stories we want to cover. Max, do you want to talk a little bit about Clear Signing?
Yeah, I would love to. Clear Signing, very relevant to what we're discussing today. It's an initiative that the Ethereum Foundation, a bunch of wallet teams, developers across, you know, the whole industry, started to basically try to standardize transaction confirmations such that they're human readable, right? So when you go to, place a transaction through an app or just a simple transfer, instead of seeing kind of like a garbled mess of like hacks and functions that you don't really know what's going on, but you just like trust the website that it'll probably do what you want it to do, you get actually before you sign the transaction, like a human readable version of the confirmation, and you have, you know, some higher confidence that the transaction you want to go through is actually the one that you're signing. So it's definitely in response to a lot of the things we're seeing and what we'll talk about today, but I thought it was noteworthy to call out.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think that, at least from a user perspective, is a very sensible upgrade and addition to the protocol.
Yeah. And like naturally there are a bunch of like, there's a lot of nuance baked in, right? Into like exactly how you implement it and how you use these things. So we'll get into like kind of the trade-offs and the nuance, as is common with like the cat and mouse race that is, you know, attackers and those securing assets on the other side.
Certainly. And I think just one other news story to cover, which will be relevant as we get further along in the show, is that Aave and KelpDAO, following their April 18th exploit, have announced that they are in the process of resuming normal operations. So this comes after DeFi United raised over $300 million to backstop the loss from the KelpDAO exploit that then hit Aave. Both protocols are slowly resuming operations, which is good news. It's good news following that big exploit. But I think that leads us into the topic du jour, the topic of the day, which is that April was a very big month for crypto exploits. Just looking at some of the numbers here, we had over 25 attacks with over $630 million stolen and 14 hacks with losses over $1 million. But there were really two notable hacks that we're going to dive into. And I think the first one, maybe just to set the stage, is the Drift Protocol hack. Does anyone want to take that one away for us?
Sure, I'll take that one. So the Drift hack was a pretty fascinating one, mostly because of a long-running social engineering attack that was sort of the crux of the entire thing. So the attackers posed as a legit trading firm and fostered a relationship with the Drift team over a period of 6 months. And they even deployed like material capital into Drift's protocol. And over the course of those 6 months, they were, you know, sending, say, like test apps back and forth to get the Drift team's opinions on certain things. And some of those test apps contained malicious code. And basically what they were able to do is compromise enough of the admin keys for the Drift protocol to take over all of the admin functions. So once they had compromised enough keys of Drift's multi-sig, what they did was they added a new collateral type to the protocol. And it was for a fake coin called CVT that they had created. And they manipulated an oracle to make this coin appear to have great value. So in the span of about 15 minutes, they enabled this new coin as collateral on the protocol. They deposited a bunch in and left with assets like Solana and wrapped ETH and basically highly liquid assets on Solana, and then took that and ended up with ETH and Bitcoin, and there were some stable coins in there as well. But that's basically how the attack went. And like I said before, there was a massive long-running social engineering attack that sort of made every team in DeFi a little bit paranoid and sort of want to double check all of their own security practices and who they had been interacting with and whatnot.
It's crazy to me that they worked for 6+ months to get everything set up and they were able to execute the hack and the heist in 15 minutes, you say, right? Like 6 months of work all put into just 15 minutes where basically once you get to that point, you can kind of just run wild, right? Like in production, 15 minutes in and out, right? I think that was, Dave, I know you have strong feelings on like that sort of structure. And I think just in traditional systems, especially financial systems, that's like the amount of time it takes. It's a fraction of the amount of time it takes for any approvals to go through or any delays that are baked into the system. But the fact that they were able to complete the whole round trip in 15 minutes was really what stood out to me personally. Yeah, Matt, I'm curious how this, if you had any thoughts as well, that'd be great, but how this compares to the other hack we saw in April and how you're thinking about that.
Yeah, certainly. I think first on this one, just like to add some, I think, important context. At the time of the hack, Drift was one of the largest DeFi protocols on Solana. So this is not some small team, inexperienced security team, right? Like this is a very experienced team. And a very important part of the Solana ecosystem. So it's very, very notable, even if you take the dollar amount away and out of the hack. And then I think just like going back to what you were talking about, Max, with clear signing, and this is obviously on Solana, but there was an element of blind signing here, which I think is also notable. The way that the hacker was actually able to gain access to those admin keys is that they created transactions that buried in the transaction, essentially transferred admin control over to their address. And so I think it all goes to say that these social engineering attacks are very sophisticated and similar to what you see in traditional finance, traditional just IT systems. The attack surface vector is always kind of changing, right? It's a bit of a game of whack-a-mole. And so it just calls on everyone to be very aware and very cautious. And I think that leads in nicely to the second big hack, which is the Kelp DAO hack. So this was a $292 million breach. Essentially another form of social engineering in which the attacker was able to poison 2 RPC nodes on a layer 0 DVN. The DVN for Kelp DAO was just 1 of 1. So it was a single DVN signing messages to verify cross-chain asset transfers. And in poisoning those RPC nodes, the attacker was able to mint $292 million of RS ETH or Kelp DAO's liquid staking token that was not backed by actual restaked ETH, and then quickly deposit that RS ETH on Aave and take out large loans with essentially unbacked collateral. So this one obviously hit Kelp DAO as you now have a large number of unbacked RS ETH in the ecosystem, but 2 quickly spread across the DeFi ecosystem as Aave was hit and now has a hole in their balance sheet. We saw over almost $14 billion leave DeFi very quickly. Most of that was on Aave, $8.5 billion left within hours. And then we saw utilization rates on Aave hit 100%. So what that basically means is that if you didn't get off of the platform before utilization hit 100%, you now no longer could until new liquidity came on the platform or loans were repaid. So it was really an on-the-brink moment for DeFi and pretty scary. But I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts both on the social engineering, Aave's response, DeFi United. There's a lot to cover here.
I think it's easy to get a bit lost in the weeds here. It sounds like, I first have a question. When you say that the Deviants were poisoned, what do you mean by that? Like, is it them gaining access to the specific machines that are responsible for that, like, bridging feature?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So these are nodes that are passing messages to the Deviant itself. So Layer Zero's protocol worked as intended. It was just that this attacker was able to pass malicious messages that appeared to be valid because they fit the requirements of a message on Layer Zero, but in fact were malicious.
That to me is a big similarity of the difference between just appearance and what's going on, you know, in the underlying. And I think that is a big part of what Clear Signing is trying to accomplish. And there are a bunch of other like existing frameworks like already available to try to, you know, remove that kind of ambiguity from what you're seeing and what's going on in the underlying. But David, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like the exit plan for both of these was pretty similar in terms of having some bad collateral or worthless collateral and then taking out real valuable assets from some protocol. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the end state is to end up with L1 assets that are hard to freeze or basically impossible to freeze, like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And a lot of the times, stablecoins are part of an intermediary step to get there because stablecoins themselves are highly liquid, but stablecoins can obviously be frozen. And the different stablecoin issuers have different protocols around freezing. So in the Bybit hack, they converted to USDC and Tether, and Tether froze very quickly. And Circle has publicly stated their policy is to wait for a court order or to be legally compelled to freeze. So that was very interesting, and it caught a lot of people by surprise because they would have expected it to be the opposite. They would have expected Circle to be the more aggressive one to freeze and Tether to be the more lax one. And then when the Drift hack happened, we saw that they exclusively used USDC. And they had about a 6-hour window there where Circle was waiting for a court order to freeze. And the reaction from the community was pretty unhappy. But, you know, there are some advantages to waiting for a court order, right? It protects property rights and it prevents arbitrary seizures. And it keeps USDC aligned with traditional finance laws. And it prevents centralized abuse of power. So these are complicated issues. But the stablecoin factor is interesting. And then with the Kelp DAO hack, there wasn't much of a stablecoin factor there. They went to Aave and they withdrew ETH, wrapped ETH, and a few other like highly liquid assets.
I think to that point, David, just an interesting anecdote is what happened after the Drift hack, which is that Tether essentially bailed them out, and now USDT is the de facto stablecoin on Drift. So that is just an interesting anecdote. But I think taking it up a notch, right? Like, what are we talking about here? We've talked about hacks in crypto previously. And I think what's notable now, and I'm curious what you both think about this, is that these are largely social engineering schemes. They're not smart contract bugs. They're not exploits of vulnerabilities. It is very heavily skewed towards social engineering. And what does that mean from a security perspective? And what does that mean for the ecosystem?
It's interesting because a lot of the times it's not smart contract exploits, at least for these big notable hacks. So it sort of leaves you with multiple options, right? You can bake safety into the DeFi protocols, but that begins to run up against sort of the value prop of DeFi. You can focus on the social layer and trying to prevent the social engineering attacks. That is very difficult because it's like human nature. It's like hard to train people to notice or it's just hard to get people to know if they are being exploited themselves. And you can also focus on the infrastructure layer. So the infrastructure that surrounds DeFi, like these bridges and whatnot, I think there's a lot that can be done to shore up that part. So you know, there's a few things you can do to try to resolve this, and it probably warrants work in all three areas. That's sort of my take on it.
Yeah, I think the reason, part of the reason we're not seeing too many like smart contract bugs is because, at least from my point of view, there does seem to be a clearer industry standard for the very like specific execution of code and how that's handled, right? I think developers in the space have done a really good job of iterating and finding kind of the hardest ways to do XYZ, right? If you're a trading platform, like there are very clear do's and don'ts in that realm. But on the social engineering side and maybe even the infrastructure side that we've seen, it doesn't seem to be as clear or as ironed out. And I think that's like part of the next steps. To David, kind of to your point, like I'm thinking about it a little bit like a flowing of water. Like the water's going to find, you know, it's going to go as deep as it can to find its way down, you know. So if we maybe prioritize the infrastructure side, the water will flow to the social engineering side and vice versa. So I think it might take a little while till we actually get like full-blown industry standards across every part of the tech stack and human stack that actually like matters and makes every piece robust. It's a bit of a bearish view, but seems like a heavy lift for sure.
Well, I think Max, to your point, like maybe that seems bearish, but let's just be realistic about the broader state of cybersecurity. I think it's pretty widely accepted. It's a game of whack-a-mole, right? Like you have attackers who are always looking for attack vectors. And if that's your ultimate goal, you know, you might find some. And as cybersecurity shifts focus from one aspect to another, the attackers also shift their focus away. So it is definitely a game of whack-a-mole. But I also think the fact that these have not been smart contract bugs is a sign of maturity for the industry, right? Because if we look at hacks outside of crypto, you know, there's a Yale study that cites 98% reliance on social engineering. There's a Verizon study that cites 68%. This is kind of the standard way that hackers gain access to systems is through social engineering. And the days of smart contract bug exploits, I think, was a sign of a bit of crypto immaturity. And the fact that we're not seeing that now is really, I think, a maturation of the industry.
So I'm going to push back on that a little bit.
Let's do it.
So last month, while it wasn't the biggest month in terms of funds stolen, that was, you know, like February of 25 was when the Bybit hack happened. And that was roughly three times more funds stolen that month than last month. There was the highest number of hacking incidents on record, which was 29 separate incidents. And a lot of those incidents were smart contract exploits for just smaller amounts. And so I think that brings us to the whole conversation about AI and how much of a factor that's really playing today and how much of a factor it could play in the future. So while the big DeFi protocols like Aave and Uniswap appear to be quite hardened, I think there's still a lot of TVL out there that is in exploitable contracts that AI has probably already begun to go out and find. And so this 29 hacks in April, I think, is possibly telling that we're sort of at the beginning of this AI wreaking havoc in DeFi stage, at least on these less mature contracts. And going forward, you know, we'll see if that's actually happening as these models get more advanced. But Binance has come out and said that they believe that this has begun. And Google has come out and also basically said, we believe that the AI hacking era has begun. And so we'll see how it goes, right? Obviously, it can be used defensively and offensively, but there will probably be some asymmetries there. And it will probably end up advantaging one side over the other. And when it comes to automation, one hacker can cheaply automate going out and scanning millions of smart contracts for vulnerabilities, while the defenders have to manually secure each contract. So my initial thought is that AI may advantage the attackers because it's like large scale automation, and the defenders have a much more manual job to do. They each have to secure each contract individually. It's sort of like the opposite of encryption, right? Encryption makes it cheap to encrypt lots of files. And then the attacker, it's very expensive to decrypt one file. So the asymmetries in encryption favor the defenders. But with AI, you know, it's still unclear, but my initial thought is that, you know, one attacker can automate a ton of work, and defenders have a much more difficult job to do.
I'm not sure where I fall. I personally, like, if you gave the same model to both the attacker and the defender, say he runs it first on his one contract that he's securing, he will find the same vulnerability, right? And then, yes, maybe the additional manual work is like having to fix it. That might be a little more costly and take a little more time. I'm not yet convinced on the asymmetry, at least over the long term. I'm like, over short, you know, months or years, like, it seems obvious that there won't be exact parity. But I'm not sure where I land in terms of like the long term. Is it an encryption type of asymmetry, or is it maybe still along the lines of like the cat and mouse? Everybody's pretty close to parity, and it's just a matter of like where you're prioritizing your resources versus the attackers and if you can stay ahead or not, right? But it's like a close game in that sense. So I'm not sure. Matt, what do you think?
I tend to take a more optimistic view. So I'm going to be the optimist here, David. I think that if you have an attacker scanning hundreds and thousands of smart contracts, right, they can scan for vulnerabilities and attempt to exploit them. But if I'm the defender and my portfolio of smart contracts is only 10 smart contracts, I can focus all of my capabilities on just those 10 smart contracts. And that's a much smaller surface area to cover. Now, of course, there's still what we're assuming here is parity between access to AI models, which is no guarantee. And then also, you know, what we're not really getting into is the process for upgrading and patching those vulnerabilities, which will differ across protocols, ecosystems, and systems. So it's certainly going to be interesting to watch, but maybe I will just ask you guys here, what can users do to prevent themselves being socially engineered? What can protocols do to kind of attempt to prevent being exploited in this kind of social engineering scheme?
So, you know, I would say obviously the basics is like understand the nature of technology you're using. So like basic things like not sharing your seed phrase. I think that protocols have a difficult decision to make here, which is like, do they want to bake in things like sanity checks or time delays into the protocols themselves? And I think that investors also have a difficult job to do here, which is to gauge the risk that they're taking when they deposit funds into DeFi. And that risk profile is constantly shifting as new infrastructure gets built surrounding DeFi and as new exploits are discovered and as AI matures. But I think that what this all, at least as far as the AI conversation goes, it very clearly shows how existential it is to be leading the AI race, right? It very clearly demonstrates why it's important to have the most advanced AI models, because if you don't, you know, you're not in a good place.
Yeah, my viewpoint comes more from like the team or business perspective and how it's basically an opportunity to prioritize security now that like everyone's talking about it and it's a clear concern from their client base, right, or investor base, right? Now that investors are really digging into the numbers in terms of how do I crunch this? How do I come out with a reasonable risk profile? And what does that look like? The teams that, you know, spend the money and the resources to prioritize making that a clear picture and solidifying, like kind of siloing off their risks as best they can, prioritizing that above their competitors. It seems like kind of a no-brainer. Almost counter to David's point. I don't think the question is if we should do it. I think it's just to what degree does it make sense for each individual team to prioritize that and weigh that against their other, you know, business objectives.
I think those are both really great takes. I will just also say there's a great MetaMask write-up on social engineering and crypto. It details, you know, some strong ways to kind of prevent being social engineered or having malware installed on your computer. But I think it all goes back to basic principles. Don't click on links you don't know. Don't download files or apps that you can't verify. Just be very careful because people are attempting to exploit these systems. But I think with that, gentlemen, we can leave it there. Thank you for another great episode. Thank you to everyone for joining, and everyone stay safe out there.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2026 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.